Blog Talk Radio.
Attention, Army Wives! Fall in!
You're tuned to the Internet Talk Radio Show designed specifically for Army Wives. Our life, our family, our soldier.
Brought to you by the Army Wife Network. Interactive empowerment for Army Wives. It's Army Wife Talk Radio. Up to the minute information is right here with special reports, stories, interviews, and more.
Now reporting for duty, your hosts, Tara Crook and Star Henderson.
Hi ho, hi ho. It's back to work I go. Hello, fellow Army Wives and Army families out there. Welcome to Army Wife Talk Radio, show 412. I am your host, returning with less money and a renewed energy. And my name is still Tara Crooks.
Welcome back. And I'm your host, Paula Swanson. It's Monday, March 25th, 2013, and we're so glad that you've decided to join us tonight.
I'm glad you decided to join us, because otherwise I'd just be sitting here talking to Paula. And though we can make each other laugh after a while, we need a guest. Well, if you guys
we get
enjoyed
a little boring.
Well, I mean, we'll at least need some wine. I'm just saying.
So, I got that under control.
If you're joining us live tonight, we want you to know you can join us live in our chat room. It's where all of the stuff happens, to be honest with you. We are multitaskers, and we can carry on about 15 different conversations at once. So if you want to be part of all of those conversations, make sure that you go to blogtalkradio.com/AWTR, and when you listen to the show, about halfway down the page, all of a sudden the chat will open up. And we've got our chat moderator, Kristen, our AWN core team, and our veteran listeners all over there. If you are a guest and you haven't signed in by one of the 13,000 ways you can sign in through Blog Talk Radio, including your Facebook page, then you're a lurker and you don't get to talk back to us. And you know, your parents always told you don't talk back, but this is the one time we really want you to do it. So make sure that you're logged in so we can chat. You can also follow us over there at Twitterville at twitter.com/ArmyWifeNetwork. We're going to use hashtag ArmyWife like we do every Monday night. If you want to follow along, ask questions. You got Kristen over there manning that too. So we are all social media'd up.
Yes. And boy, Tara is very chipper tonight.
I'm chipper because it's Monday and I'm back with my family, my girls, you know, not, and I'm not talking about the one that's outside of these four walls. I'm talking about you guys. I'm really excited to be back. I missed you. And I had a good time, though. I really did have a good time.
Well, we'll hear about that in a little bit, won't we?
Yeah. I will.
Yeah. Well, we're
about all
the
money to be spending.
Yeah. We also want to give a huge thanks to our platform, Blog Talk Radio, and all of our AWN sponsorship team for allowing us to bring you Army Wife Talk Radio tonight.
We prefer to do it with the lights on, so thank you very much, you guys. So I was gone. You and Star had a good show last week. What was I doing last Monday night? Last Monday night, I was on a plane, and then Monday night, I was out to dinner with our good friends in Las Vegas. So that is that's what I did. I'll tell you more about our spring break. But what did you do last week?
What did I do last week? Wow. I really didn't do much except work, work, work. But I have something fun, though, coming up this weekend. I'm real excited about. And it's true that your battle buddies are for life, no matter what. And with this crazy military life and the crazy Army lifestyle, especially sometimes, it's really cool when you have that person, that friend, that you just have that connection with no matter what, no matter where you go. Time flies, that sort of thing. One of my dearest, truest friends, I'm actually going to see this weekend, and we became battle buddies before battle buddies was the term to use. And we met when we were stationed at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and lived in Lee Village in 1987. And she is coming into town this weekend, and we get to see each other, actually see each other for the first time in about 22 years.
So was it like you had never lost touch?
Exactly. I mean, we talk on the phone. We, you know, Facebook and email and text and that sort of stuff. But there were a couple of times during the last 22 years where we may actually go a year, maybe 2 years without talking to each other. And then one of us will send a text or a phone call or something, and it's just like I talked to her yesterday.
So on that same topic, I agree. Battle buddies are, you should have seen us today. Some of our, okay, well, let me back up for a second. This is all going to make one big story. I swear it will. So so they start, they put it, we're going to start with this. We're going to start with the important part. They're putting a target at Fort Sill. Okay, you guys? Yay, Target! Okay, they've been wanting to put a Target at Fort Sill for like the last 5 years or more that I've lived here, and the first and second time that I lived here too. So they're finally, I mean, it's open, or it's built. The red balls are out front. It's got the big Target on it, you know, already. So it's going to open. It's going to open in July, they said. So I was like, yes. Thank you for announcing your opening, because I know now that they will for sure PCS this. Now, what you guys don't, I don't know if you're been tracking this or not, but we've been supposed to have been PCSing for like the last 2 years. So every time they come in, they're like, oh, yeah, you're going to move. And then next night, no, you're going to have deployment. Oh, you're going to move. Nope, we're going to move this other job. And they like to move us across the tracks from ForceCom to TRADOC. So just, you know, mess with their lives. So, but we've always just stayed here in the same house and everything, which is nice. But they're going to open the Target. So, of course, the minute we find out that they're going to open the Target, I said, we're going to get orders. Now it's time. And it was not, it was hilarious. We went to Vegas last week, which is going to bring me back to the other part of that story. And so Kevin missed the email, and as soon as he got there this morning, they were waiting on his five choices from the list. So I just laughed. I was like, of course they want us to move this summer. That's when Target opens! So, not that there's no other Targets everywhere else. It's just funny. It just was like, yeah, they finally get it after I've complained for 5 years. I had to laugh. So I'm finding great humor in that. All right, so exactly. It's not like I can't get the city to go to Target. You know, I'm just being goofy.
Well, now it depends. It depends on what part of the country you're in, because we have Targets and we have Target.
Target, yes. Well, it is Target to me, but here it's probably
so.
Target. Let's just be honest. But what I was going to say is when he got the list today, my very first thing that I said was, okay, let me look at this list. And he did not understand this, and I'm sure you guys do, and men don't, or I don't know, maybe it's not a male-female thing, but I looked at the list, and I was like, okay, such-and-such is here, such-and-such is here, so-and-so retired here, blah-blah-blah's doing here, this is what we could do, you know, and I'm going through, like, okay, this has access to the commissary, this has access to PX, where does this look, you know, housing on post or off, what would we have to do at these locations, and I went through all the locations, and he said, why do you care who lives where? Because he's like, they're going to move. And I'm like, well, I know, but it might be 2 years that I get to spend with them. You know what I mean? Or we might meet up at another place. And so I chose like that. He thought I was crazy. But back to your point of battle buddies, that's what is important to me. The people definitely, and of course he made a good point. You meet new people at every place you go, and those people, you know, are other people you might meet along your journey. So you might meet somebody new if you go somewhere you don't know anyone. And that's very true. You might also meet somebody new that somebody you know knows. So who knows? But anyhow, that's a lot of notes. The point is that they, battle buddies are for life. And this weekend, or this past week, what we did was we drove the kids and the dogs on spring break to Missouri, and we flew from Missouri to Vegas, and we met up with Tina and Luke, our best friends that we met in Georgia. And it was so – what's so funny is it's – there's never that crazy, awkward, nervous, like, I'm going to see you again. I haven't seen you in so long. It's just like you've never not seen, like, they were never not your neighbor. You know what I mean? Like, we showed up, we went right into our routine. You know, it was like we knew what restaurants we liked together. We knew what we wanted to do together. Nobody argued. It was an amazing trip. It was a lot of fun with them, and it wouldn't have been half the fun if they weren't there. So that's what we did, and I love the Army for that, and that's one of the things I was telling Kevin tonight. You know, some of those locations that we got to choose from were ones that were outside of the traditional Army, and we've only got 5 years left here in the Army before, you know, it's 20. I don't know if we'll stay longer or not, but I don't want to leave the Army before I leave the Army. I'm used to being on the installation. I know you're like, whatever, because you're not used to it.
No, because I'm going to tell you right now, being an Army Reserve spouse, if given the opportunity, I would live on post in a heartbeat.
Would you?
I would.
It's different. It's not necessarily living, even near the installation, you know, is, mm-hmm. is something too. So, I mean, I don't know if we will necessarily live on post everywhere we go, but.
I personally had good experiences, so. And I know that that's not the way it is for everyone. And, I mean, even back in 1987, being at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and being in Lee Village, which was horrible, I mean, that was probably the worst housing that there was, it was still a great experience. And I do. I miss it sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know. That was one of my things. I want to go, and he's like, you know, they're only going to be there for like half the time we're there, so why are you so worried about it? I'm like, yes, but they're already there. That's the other thing. When you know people who are already in the location you're moving to, you know you got somebody to help you out. You know you got somebody that's going to give you good information. And not that you can't go on like Army Wife Network and ask people for information or do a lot of research yourself, but it just makes life a whole lot easier when someone is there. So that's what we did. We did our spring break in Vegas, and then we came back. And then drove back from Missouri back to here. And I tell you what, by Sunday, I was so exhausted. I learned some things in Vegas, and I know that you already know these, but our listeners don't, because I don't make everything public, but I guess I'm going to share this with you guys. I learned that you should not wear flip-flops for the first time of the season, because my feet hurt so bad. I wore flip-flops second day we were there. And they're my flip-flops I wear every year. They're the switch flops. I don't know if you guys ever heard of those, but you switch out the tops. So I've had this particular pair of flip-flops with different switches for 2 years now. So it's not like they're not broken or comfortable or anything like that. I just think it was because it was the first time of the season, or maybe because, you know, outside walking, or I have no idea. But my feet look like somebody slashed them with razors. It was awful. They were bleeding, and they did not do well. Band-aided up and everything. So then I went back to tennis shoes. And then, you know, had fancy dresses to wear to the shows that we went to, which were amazing. So I was kind of like, how am I going to pull this one off? So, yeah, the third night I wore my Toms, my sparkly Toms with my dress, which really did not look good, but it didn't look that bad, I guess. Wasn't what I wanted to wear. And Kevin was like, it's fine. Nobody, the dress is long enough, nobody can see it. But, you know, I worry about things like that. We went to see Cirque du Soleil Ka. We've been to Mystere, so we went to Ka this time. And oh, my God, Paula, it was amazing.
Was it?
It's worth every dime. Seriously, like the whole time you're sitting there, you're like, well, that's why the tickets were $135.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, because it was just so amazing. I mean, not that the performers weren't amazing, because they were, but the whole time I was like, Kevin said he'd never seen me watch anything like that. I literally was on the edge of my seat just leaning in, because – the set design and the costumes and the lighting, I mean, just everything, I don't know how they did it all. It was so big, it was almost unbelievable. It was almost like you were watching a movie, only, you know, you were like, wow, this is live. You know what I mean? It just was.
Yeah, you were part of it. I mean,
yeah,
right,
it was
there.
Just amazing. When it snowed, it got cold in there. I mean, it was just one of those, like, experiences, not just, like, watching something. It was an experience. It was awesome. And, oh, I filed my taxes last week. That's on my list here. How boring is that after Vegas?
Boring or depressing?
Boring. It was depressing. Yeah, not only did I give all my money to Vegas, but I also gave all my money to the government. So doing my part to stimulate the economy, folks. We took family pictures for that Military Spouse of Year spread in the Military Spouse magazine the Friday before we left. So that's what I've been up to. It's been kind of crazy around here. I was really glad. Yesterday I laid there and I was watching some of my catch-up DVR, and I was just kind of chilling. And Kevin said, are you okay? You know, because he's used to me running around like a crazy chicken. And I said, I am fine. I am so excited about next week being a normal week. And he laughed. And he goes, nothing is ever normal for you. I was like, I know, but I have 2 weeks that I don't have to go anywhere. And I'm just excited. I mean, I'm excited to go on all my trips, especially this summer, and I'm excited about a move potentially and all this other stuff. But isn't it nice just to have a couple of weeks that you just don't have to go anywhere, that you can just go?
I like that idea.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
All right. Well, that's what I did. And while I was gone, though, you guys were hopping, man. You guys were busy. I came back to 869 emails. I think it was 860-something. And I'm not going to tell you the amount of status updates, because I do know I checked it a couple of times, but I know I missed out on a whole bunch of stuff. It took me a little while to catch up just what was even going on over there at AWN Facebook. But anyhow, I'm going to let you catch everybody up here real quick on what went on over at AWN.
Army Wives, it's not your grandma's army anymore.
The military, in this day and age, plays a whole different tune. Army Wife Network is listening. We are interactive empowerment for Army Wives. a network of Army Wives band together by the power of social media. Army Wives supporting each other by utilizing the array of resources available from military and civilian-led support systems. Here's what's going on at Army Wife Network this week.
Ladies, and check it out.
Okay, so over on our AWN Happenings, that's on our main page, armywifenetwork.com. There is a list of columns. We have contributors to the columns such as benefits and career, education, health and fitness. But one of our contributors is Military Spouse Business Association contributor Veronica Jordan, and she features five MilSpouse business owners, and they share their story and how did they get started. So she features a wide range list of spouses who are building their careers on their own terms despite the curveballs that the military life sends their way. And for MilSpouses who are in business for themselves, that can be challenging. So if you go over to the career under columns and read how did they get started, you'll get an idea. And then the other one, which I thought was a really good one, was under the money column, USAA's Scott Halliwell has five ways to spend your income tax refund. And the urge to buy something nice with a little extra cash is just as real for the certified financial planners as it is for you and me.
I told Scott that he could write his check out to Tara Crooks.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
no,
I love,
not
you know,
problem.
What I loved about this article that he wrote is he says, so with a financial planner's brain and a human being's heart, I'd like to share my top five tips for what to do with your tax refund. I mean, the reality of it is, yes, you get that little bit of extra money,
right,
and you want to spend something on yourself, and you should. And he actually says, take
I don't get
a
any
portion
money back.
Of it.
I had to pay.
Well, you went to Vegas.
So. No, I really did have to pay, but that's okay. I had a good year, and Kevin was deployed, so we didn't pay any taxes.
Right.
So, anyway, yeah.
Right. But I do like what he said in the five, you know, things that he gives you, the five suggestions. And if you go over to the money column and read that, five ways to spend your income tax refund, he's got some good tips there. So that's kind of what's going on with the Army Wife Network happenings over on armywifenetwork.com.
All right, so our Facebook page is up to 48,369 likes. And this week, the hot topics for saying yes to something means saying no to something else, which is Star's quote, one of my very favorites on time management. The graphic, ask yourself if what you're doing today is getting you closer to where you want to be tomorrow. Dun, dun, dun. It's also great advice. And Star was on WGN Radio. Did you get to hear that?
I did. I went back and listened to it because I fell asleep before she went on. And so I did go back and listen to both segments, and it was really good.
So I wasn't
She did a
here.
Great job.
So I had to go out and listen to him today. You guys have got to know this. You've got to know she's not here, so I'm totally going to dime her out, and she's probably not going to listen back to this, so it's our secret. Whatever, she put it out there, so it's her. I have known this girl for many years, and I've never known her to ever have smoked a cigarette. So to hear her about that when she was deployed, I was like, what? Did they just go to somebody else on this interview? Like, what?
I was shocked. I mean, shocked by that.
Don't get me wrong. I know you guys know this sweet little special Star that's, you know, never up to any trouble.
Well,
I know
no.
the real Star who's rotten to the core. No, I love her to pieces, but she does have a wild side most people don't know about. But I didn't know that. So I
here's
went,
what,
huh?
And here's what's funny about it is she smoked, but yet she didn't know how to go and buy them.
Right, right.
So that was what was really funny, you know. I was like, oh, my gosh, she smoked. And then I was like, but she didn't know how to buy them?
Well, I thought so funny is the host was like, what? What do you mean?
I know.
Yeah, it was just really funny because she was like, I don't understand what you're saying.
It was a great interview, though. It really was. And then she was asked back on over the weekend.
Yes, she did, and I haven't heard that one yet because I wasn't.
I haven't heard that one yet.
I wasn't around for it, but she said that she was going to send us a link, and she just didn't have it together yet.
Right.
So hopefully they'll do that. Now, over at Loving a Soldier this week, Mallory gave us a blog, What Do You Desire to Be? Janet gave us, Do You Have an I Kid? For sure. And Rebecca, Get Skills to Work. She got to go Man, there's all sorts of cool stuff happening around here. She got to go and meet, just Gary's niece. No big deal. And sit, within, 2 feet of him. I'm like, are you serious? So cool. But how neat is it? I mean, it was very neat for Rebecca, but how neat is it that Army Wife Network is out there as a team? We are out there enough that somebody went, hey, I saw on Army Wife Network that you have somebody who lives in Cincinnati, and we have, it was like, they would have really had to have looked at our pages to know that. And they totally sent it to us and said, hey, do you want to join us? I mean, it was just so cool. Everything aligned and it just worked out perfect. And I mean, who could turn down meeting Gary Sinise? Lieutenant Dan. That is so awesome. It was just very exciting. All righty. Well, that's what went on over at AWN this week.
Yeah, that was quite a bit. But it's time for us to fill the love tanks of military supporters out there and do our duty as good citizens to support them. It's public service announcement time. Do you or your business have a military-related PSA? We limit them to 2 per show and ask for them 10 days in advance. If you do, please email info@armywifenetwork.com. And our first one is the 2013 Army 10-miler runner field has been increased. So race officials will expand the Army 10-milers running field to 35,000 participants for the 2013 race. The race date is Sunday, October 20th in Washington, D.C. at the Pentagon. So start training now and run Army strong. Also, the Army 10-miler annual T-shirt design contest for 2013 is open to all legal residents of the United States and the District of Columbia. Entrants must be at least 18 years old as of date of entry. Employees of the Army 10-miler office and their immediate families are not eligible to enter. No purchase is necessary, and only 2 entries per person will be accepted. Contest submission dates are going on now. They started February 27th, and it's until May 3rd at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. For more details about this contest, the race, and shadow runs, visit Army10Miler.com. And I know that we've had quite a few of Army Wife Network core team participating in that each year.
We have participated, and then we have actually done a table up there. It's been 2 years since I've been up there, but my good friend George Banker pretty much says that if we need anything or any of our fans need anything, just let us know, and he'll be able to help you out. He is a good man. He's got some good people up there. So, yeah, go check that out. That's cool that they made it bigger. So, woot woot. Okay, so you guys know about the TSP, the Thrift Savings Plan, right? Well, right now, and I'm sure you've got an iPhone or something of the like, right now out in the iPhone App Store as well as some of the Droid apps, there are some Thrift Saving Plan mobile applications that are not sanctioned by the TSP. So there is no official Thrift Savings Plan mobile application out there. If you are going to put your information and seek the advice that are provided by these third-party applications, just be careful, because when you put your account information in there, it is not safe like it is on a sanctioned TSP. Like the website, and there's just not a mobile app out there that they've put out that's secure enough, and so just be really, really careful on that. And I think we put that on the Facebook page as well. If you guys want more information on keeping your account safe, you can visit the Security Center on the TSP website or contact them on the Thrift Line at 1TSPUFRST. It's 1TSPUFIRST. And, of course, that website is tsp.gov. Okay, guys? So tonight, oh, my gosh, I'm going to make sure that I don't say her name wrong, but shoot, I inhaled at the same time I was talking. Sorry, guys. Erin Solello, is that right? Solello, that sounds right.
Solello.
Solello is the author of Learning to Stay, and you can visit her website at Erin, CELELLO.com, and it's Erin, ERIN. Sorry, guys. Her Facebook page is facebook.com/ECELELLO. Kind of like Jello, but Lello. Solello. Ooh, I like it. Flowing now. It's all flowing. Our resource of the week is Lisa Dudley, and you can visit her at lisadudley.com, and it's DUDLEY.com. And so we've got lots of stuff coming up, even the Me Minute this evening. So good stuff, good convo, can't wait. But first, we have to get caught up on our news like we do every week from Corey News 6. So stay tuned, guys. We'll be right back with more Army Wife Talk Radio and our main guest. Aaron Salello, the author of Learning to Stay, in just a few minutes.
Attention, Army Wives! Get your hoo-ah on in our Army Wife Network Marketplace. We've got perfect tees in many colors and sizes. Hats, bags, mugs, and more. Grab a little something for your Army bread, or show your AWN spirit by slapping a sticker on the back of your POV. Visit our shop from our homepage at www.armywifenetwork.com or find us on Cafe Press, www.cafepress.com/Army Wife Network. Hoo-ah! It's time for the AWTR Live News 6 Report.
Our life, our family, our soldier, news you can use.
Now, with our headlines, it's our own AWN News 6.
Good evening, Army family. This is your News 6 story, giving you your need-to-know news. Leading our News 6 segment tonight is a federal budget with a side of tuition assistance. On March 21st, the House voted to approve the 2013 Continuing Resolution, which is a stopgap measure that helps fund federal agencies through September 30th. The resolution includes an amendment instructing secretaries of the branches of the military to reinstate the tuition assistance program until the end of fiscal year 2013. Thursday's legislation does not cover cuts specifically prescribed in the automatic across-the-board sequester legislation. A spokesman for the Department of Defense said his office values the tuition assistance program, but the fiscal climate is ripe for reevaluating programs. He says, as always, whenever the president signs legislation proposed by Congress into law, we will comply. If enacted, this legislation would require the services to make difficult and very thoughtful decisions on how to fund tuition assistance throughout the remainder of FY13 without impacting readiness. And in national news, Secretary of State John Kerry paid an unannounced visit to Afghanistan on Monday for talks with President Hamid Karzai, an official said, with both sides hoping to stabilize the country before most foreign troops leave by the end of 2014. Kerry and Karzai will discuss a host of issues, including Afghan reconciliation, the transfer of security responsibility to Afghan forces, and Afghanistan's elections. Karzai's government is trying to open formal negotiations with the Taliban, who have remained resilient in the face of superior NATO firepower in the war now in its 12th year. Karzai is due to travel to Qatar within days to discuss the peace process and the opening of a Taliban office for conducting negotiations. The trip comes after years of stalled discussions with the United States, Pakistan, and the Taliban. The process of winding down our current position and role in Afghanistan and stepping into more of a support role is not going to be a smooth process at all times. Issues of sovereignty and security are always going to be difficult, said a Department of State official. In Army news, after another rise in the military suicide rate last year, the services on Thursday outlined to Congress their efforts to reverse the trend and evaluate their prevention programs. The overall program review has fallen to the Pentagon's relatively new Defense Suicide Prevention Office, which opened in 2011. By the end of September, it should complete its comprehensive inventory of all of the services programs and will have identified gaps and overlaps in the various efforts. From there, the office will begin to streamline and unify what is offered across the services. When asked during a hearing with the House Armed Services Subcommittee on Military Personnel about how many lives had been saved because of current programs and training, Army Deputy Chief of Staff for Manpower and Personnel Lieutenant General Bromberg replied, "We're just starting to do that now." He noted that the Army has tracked for 24 months an infantry unit that went through resiliency training to see the impact it had on suicide outcomes. They found that while suicidal gestures were the same, the number of peer-to-peer interventions went up. He said the Army is working on changing its culture, which has long stigmatized the need for mental health care. The service claims to have made a dent in the stigma over recent years, pointing to survey results that show the percentage of enlisted soldiers who thought seeking mental health care would harm their career had dropped from 69% in 1999 to 52% in 2012 and 81% to 54% for officers. All the services stressed that suicide is a growing nationwide problem, reflecting a frustration with lawmakers' focus on suicide within the military community. And those are your Need to Know news stories for this week. Stay tuned to the Army Wife Network Facebook page for updates throughout the week. This is your News 6, Corey, signing out.
Thank you, ma'am. All right, guys, stay tuned. We've got our main guest coming up here in just a few minutes. We'll be right back.
For more than 140 years, the Armed Services YMCA has provided educational, recreational, and other support services to military families. The Armed Services YMCA takes care of the military so they can take care of us. This is General Norman Schwarzkopf. To find out how you can help support America's military families, visit asymca.org or call 1-800-597-1260.
Servicemen and women are coming home bearing the physical and emotional wounds of war. Anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, and substance abuse often appear after the excitement of homecoming subsides. Seeking help is a sign of strength. Visit HealthyMinds.org to learn more about military mental health from the American Psychiatric Association.
You're listening to Army Wife Talk Radio live here on the Army Wife Network. Our live show is broadcast every Monday night. Join us in our live chat room at blogtalkradio.com/AWTR. Missed a live show or just can't make it? Don't worry. AWTR is available in archived format 24/7 via our website, www.armywifenetwork.com, or on iTunes. It's interactive empowerment for Army Wives by Army Wives. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Army Wife Talk Radio. I'm your host, Tara Crooks.
And I'm your host, Paula Swanson. And tonight we have with us author Aaron Salelo. And Aaron was born and raised in Michigan's gorgeous Upper Peninsula, where she spearheaded a neighborhood effort to sell trilliums in beer bottles because lemonade stand revenues just weren't cutting it. She took herself to do a Three Amigos mount onto her saint-like horse's back, ski raced, spent a lot of time trying to get out of track workouts, and made many dubious fashion and hair choices, which thankfully Facebook was not around and available at that time. One dubious choice in general resulted in her having to paint the rival football team's stadium.
Erin received an English degree from St. Norbert College, where she also ran track and was an editor of the St. Norbert Times. She is the author of Learning to Stay, which tackles the exploration of one couple's struggle to overcome a traumatic brain injury that has left them strangers and their happy marriage a past life. Eventually, Erin landed in Madison, Wisconsin. Or no, Wyoming. No, Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
Did I look at that funny? Where she lives with her husband, and I was too worried about mispronouncing the dog name, so I'm like half looking at the paper, sorry. Her husband, Aaron, her young son, and two unruly Vislas, is that how you say that?
That is.
Oh, I hope I'm right. Welcome to the show, Aaron, are you there?
I am here. Thank you so much, Sharon Paula, for having me on. And you did pronounce everything correctly. So
tell me about these dogs. What kind of dog is that?
They're a bird dog. They're Hungarian, and they're kind of cousins to the Weimaraner. So they're kind of smaller, I think more hyper versions of a Weimaraner.
I'm going to have to go look that up. Okay, so Aaron
yeah,
is your husband.
They're great dogs.
Aaron is your husband, and your son is?
Zeke.
Okay, well, you guys have got some cool names over there. So tell us
a little bit more
about yourself. I mean, I know this kind of was, I always say that these are our written up, you know, stuff. Tell me more about yourself and where you're calling from tonight. Wisconsin.
Absolutely. Well, tonight I'm calling, well, it should be Wisconsin. I'm actually on vacation with my family and my husband's family in Fort Myers, Florida. So,
well, that's more exciting than what I had to say.
It is pretty exciting. It's been wonderful. So, yeah, I'm sitting here looking out at palm trees and so forth. If I was home, everything would be snow-covered and icy still. So, but, yeah, and I am from from Upper Peninsula of Michigan originally and now live in Wisconsin, and I teach at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater there. I teach writing and all sorts of writing, everything from freshman composition through fiction writing and so forth. So, I'm very active in my free time. I love running. I do triathlons, I have in the past. I'm actually due with our second child in July, so there's a lot going on, and the book came out, so it's been a full couple of months, and will continue to be, I'm sure.
Good stuff. All right, so tell us why you decided to write the story of a military wife and a soldier. Is this book a result of personal experience?
It's a little bit. There's definitely, I think anything that any author writes, there's personal experience in there. I am not military. I'm fully civilian. I have no connection, personal connection, family connection with the military world, but this book came to be in a variety of ways. There were a lot of kind of puzzle pieces that went into it until it finally came together. And one of those puzzle pieces started out back when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, so a handful of years ago. I worked for the governor of Wisconsin, and that particular governor that I worked for, writing speeches and so forth, I would go on the road with him as part of his press team and go to all of his appearances and so forth. And part of that job involved going to a lot of military funerals. Governor Doyle took great pride in the fact that he didn't miss a military funeral. He would rearrange his schedule completely to be able to attend, no matter where he was in the country at the time and where he was in the state at the time. And so I saw a side of the war that I think a lot of people don't see. And it made a lasting impression on me. I saw firsthand what these family members had given up and the soldiers who had given up their lives. And it just stuck with me in a huge way. And so that was probably, I would say if I had to define an impetus for the novel, that was part of it. And then when I started to read all of these accounts of the war, a couple of years later, the signature wounds of the war started to be covered, PTSD and TBI, started to be covered in earnest by the media. And just reading those, I couldn't get out of my mind the fact that, we do pay honor to those who have given the ultimate sacrifice, but there are so many who make ultimate sacrifices every day in a way. And most people just had no idea that was happening. So those were two pieces. And then the third piece is that I've always kind of been interested in sort of the scenes between people's relationships and, kind of what happens in relationships and exploring that. And there's a wonderful memoir I read years and years back where it's a civilian couple, but the husband suffers a traumatic, severe, severe, severe traumatic brain injury, and his personality fundamentally changed. And that question of what happens when the person that you married is no longer the person you're married to sort of always stuck with me. And so I couldn't write the story that she wrote, but, all of these things kind of came together, and I thought, well, maybe I can do this story. So...
Well, Erin, how did you get inside the head of Elise, the character, and capture her conflicted feelings?
That's a great question. I for this book, I had to do a ton of research, a ton of research. I read, first of all, anything I could about the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. But those accounts left a lot out. There's part of what I think was important about tackling this subject is that we deploy reporters with, we embed reporters with troops as they deploy. But they, when the troops return, they go home. And there's still things that happen afterwards. And so that was lacking a little bit. And then I stumbled across the incredible blogging community that's out there of military spouse bloggers and some veteran bloggers. And just read voraciously through those blogs. And then thirdly, I interviewed quite a few military spouses and veterans and about their experiences and so forth. So I kind of took all of that, and then, you know, in my mind I had this one character who I tried to kind of take bits and pieces of everything I had read and people who I had talked to and imbue her with, you know, some of those qualities and struggles and resilience too.
So the story's fiction, but do you think that Learning to Stay speaks very truthfully to the experience of the everyday military family out there? I mean, how this is actually happening to them?
I hope it does. I hope it does. And the reception I've heard from those who have read it, who are, you know, my beta readers who are military spouses and veterans, came back. I ran the manuscript through several military spouses and veterans before it ever went to my editor even, and throughout the process to hopefully get this right. I wanted to really get this right. I was very cognizant of the fact that, you know, this represents a lot of people's lives out there, and I owed it, you know, to all of them to do that struggle justice. And so I tried really, really hard, and so far the reception I've gotten is that it has. And, you know, there was one other piece that I didn't mention before that kind of came together as I wrote this book. And, you know, I'm not a military spouse, and I don't have that background. But my husband, a handful of years ago, actually only a few years ago, I guess it was, got really, really, really ill. He had contracted H1N1 and spent about a month in a coma in the hospital.
Wow.
And during that time, yeah, it was a pretty traumatic experience. And during that time, the doctors didn't know what his rate of recovery would be. They didn't know, first of all, they didn't know if he would recover. That was in question almost the whole time. And then they, you know, their prognosis for if he would make a full recovery, if he would suffer brain damage from a result of not having oxygen and all those sorts of things, because his organs started to fail and he was on a full ventilator. He couldn't breathe. And so, you know, they basically said, we don't know if he'll ever go back to work. We don't know what he'll be like when he comes out of this. And, you know, thankfully he made a full recovery. It was almost a medical miracle. But during that time, I sat up a lot of nights thinking, you know, we haven't been married a year. And what if, you know, he comes out of this? How am I going to handle this? You know, what if he comes out of this a fundamentally different person? And, you know, what if all the things that I loved about him are no longer there? And that's a lot to grapple with. And so I had that experience in terms of, and those are a lot of the same questions that Elise asks in the book too. You know, what do I do now that this is, that the kind of the game's been changed on me, right? So I had that experience to draw on, and I did draw on it quite a bit. I went back and read, and I wrote him a letter every night that he was in the coma. And, I went back and read all those letters and kind of put myself back in that place to write her character. So that experience, I think, even though it's not, you know, tied to the military, it's still tied to the major themes in the book, and it helped me write it for sure.
Yeah, well, Erin, with your personal experience and with the interviews that you did and reading blogs and that sort of thing, what other research did you have to conduct regarding PTSD and traumatic brain injuries in order to write Learning to Stay?
And that was the main part of it. But then I did do a lot of sort of the technical research into traumatic brain injury and PTSD and where they overlapped and where they didn't. And I went through quite a bit of academic research. I actually had my aunt at the time was writing a dissertation. She was doing her PhD, and she was writing her dissertation on traumatic brain injury and intersection of students with traumatic brain injury with the community college system. And I edited her dissertation for her, so I got a lot of background just from that. And then went on and did a little bit more academic research. But and then I stopped, and then I stopped and kind of just wrote the story, because I think at a certain point you have to just write it. You know, there's only so much research you can do. You kind of just have to, in a certain way, just take that leap. And I did. And then I went back afterwards, and that's when I found my handful of people, beta readers, who were well-versed in, you know, military issues and deployments and, you know, knew the ins and outs and had lived it and had them be brutally honest with me about, you know, inaccuracies and so forth. And so we would go back, and I would go back and forth with them and the drafts until I sent it to my editor. And so that's kind of the process that the book went through. It was a lot to take on. You know, I sat through the whole thing. I kept thinking, you know, who am I to take this on? I haven't lived this, right? So it made me driven even more to research as much as possible and to get this right as much as I could.
Why do you think it's important that you shed light and that others do as well on TBI issues?
You know, I think TBI is one part of it, and that's really important just because it is this invisible wound.
And I should say TBI
before.
And PTSD, both of them, yeah.
And PTSD, yeah, both of them. You know, that they are these invisible wounds of war. And so just raising awareness of, you know, people who might be hiring veterans who are coming back with these issues, who, you know, teachers like myself who might have these students in school and what they're dealing with and the difficulties that they might have in readjusting. You know, it's difficult enough for some of these veterans to readjust to academic life, or life in general, but then academic life on top of that. And then if you add PTSD and a TBI into that mix, it becomes even more difficult. So just having, you know, the average civilian be really, really cognizant that you know, there are a lot of these folks out there and that they're, you know, this is an injury. This is a documented injury and that, you know, we can work with them on it. I think that that's really important. And I also think that it's just important in general for the average American to be more aware of what the cost of these wars have been. You know, it's been something that the average person has been allowed to sort of, you know, watch on the nightly news and then turn off. And for so many families across the country, they can't turn that off. And, you know, I had one person say to me that her colleague at work, the colleague's husband was deployed. And she said, you know, I really, after I read your book, I felt guilty. I should have gone to shovel her sidewalk. I should have brought her dinner. I just, you know, she said, I didn't think about it. And so if I can, you know, through this book, if I can raise awareness, just basic awareness on any of these fronts, then I'll have considered it a success.
Mm. Well, in the story, and we don't want to give too much away because it sounds like a fascinating book. It really does. But the character Brad, he finds solace and help with his service dog. And were you able to see any of these real relationships in action? And what do you think it is about a dog, you know, any dog that is helpful to people suffering from PTSD?
Absolutely. You know, I was not able to kind of go and actually see, you know, dogs being paired up with veterans and so forth. But, you know, I've been a dog person my whole life and an animal person in general. You know, I've had horses my whole life as well. And I just know that there's a healing aspect to the love, the unconditional love of an animal and a dog. And there, you know, I did just for that piece as well, I did a lot of research in terms of programs that are out there. And there's a couple of great profiles on veterans who have been paired up with dogs in this way and what it's meant to them. And so I just took bits and pieces from that. But also just, I think, being a lifelong dog lover and seeing that that in action, just even with myself, when you're having a bad day and you have a dog that will curl up next to you and look adoringly into your eyes, I mean, it's it does something to you. It does something to your heart. So I think there's, you know, I kind of extrapolated out on that personal piece of it as well.
Well, you know, I'm a dog lover. You probably don't know. So all of our listeners do. They're like, oh, God, here she goes. So, of course, I appreciate that for sure.
Wonderful.
So. Are there any other major issues that you feel servicemen and women are facing once they return home that maybe you didn't address? Like for instance, maybe any other injury that was maybe one that you could see, you know, an actual physical injury. Do you think about anything like that? Adding anything?
Yeah, I mean, There are bits and pieces of that in the book, but I didn't really ever consider. I thought it was important for this story to make that Brad's, you know, the protagonist, the narrator's husband's injuries were not visible, just because I thought that that was an important exploration that the main character needed
a little
to
harder
go
to
through.
Understand,
and
right? Yeah, I mean
it is. Yeah, I mean there are these visible injuries that you see, and you know people kind of glom on immediately to say, okay, that you know this person maybe needs a little extra assistance, or and there might be something I can do for them, or offer a little extra appreciation, whatever the case may be. And then you know with these invisible injuries, though, it's you know, it's a tough thing sometimes for these men and women to get back and reintegrate into their old lives, and have not have these things be visible to their neighbor, or their friends, or that sort of thing. You know, everyone wants them to be back to their old selves, and they're not. And so I know that's a difficult thing, and I felt pretty strongly about highlighting that for those reasons.
Well, Aaron, do you think that you'll continue to write about military family issues in the future? And are you already working on your next book?
You know, I am I'm tinkering around with a couple of different projects. They're not military related. These aren't, but I had started them before this book too, and kind of set them aside. The story took over, but I wouldn't rule it out. I think that they're really important issues, and there's a lot to be explored. But I really hope too that these issues keep rising to the surface. That other writers will take them on, you know, civilian or military, and sort of highlight these issues for the rest of the country. Because I think I think these are conversations that we need to have as a country, and those bridges need to be built between the civilian and military community. Perhaps more than ever before. You know, there's a lower percentage of our military or population serving in the military than ever before, and they're doing, one, two, three, four tours, and so I feel really strongly that those things need to be talked about, and people need to be aware that this is the situation. So I'm not sure if I will do it. I wouldn't rule it out, and we'll see what happens after this baby comes in July. But I really hope that a lot of people continue to do it.
So I'm curious if all the research and the writing that you've done has led you to anything more, or has gotten you more involved in veteran issues or veteran support. I mean, have you that kind of led you down a path maybe you didn't know that you were going to head towards?
It absolutely has. I've actually, it's been really fantastic. I've been able to use my skills at writing to give a little bit back. And I at what University of Wisconsin Whitewater, where I teach, I'm piloting a writing for veterans and military personnel course. So I've got a handful of veterans in my class, I've got a handful of National Guard students, and I've got a handful of ROTC students, and it's been a fantastic experience, and it's gone over well. I hope that it will continue. We're scheduled to do another course next semester, so that's been wonderful, and just the feedback from these students on that they have this place on campus where they can connect with other veterans, and they're kind of in a classroom of their peers, and it's been a great experience that has. And then I've also volunteered with the veterans writing program out of D.C. As a tutor for them. So right now I'm working with a veteran who's has a nonfiction memoir, a really lengthy memoir, and so I'm working with him on editing that, and hopefully he'd like to try and publish it within the next year. So helping some of these veterans tell their stories. And there's another, a Vietnam veteran who is a local author in Madison, Doug Bradley. He's involved in the local Dry Hooch and doing some writing workshops for veterans there. And so he and I are talking about, you know, continuing those and extending them and so forth. So there's a lot of exciting ways I've found that I can use, you know, this weird skill set that I have to give back a little bit to those who served.
Well, I think it's a great idea. What do you think about the rise in veteran-related literature that's been emerging?
I think it's fantastic. I think that there almost can't be enough. I'm someone who's interested in these issues, but I think that these are issues that, like I've said before, like, we should all be interested in these, military or civilian. Either way, these are issues that impact all of us. I don't think that there should be this great divide between, you know, that we let the military care about these issues and, you know, the rest of the country just kind of goes off on and does its own thing. They have to be integrated. And so I think that the more of these stories are told, the better our country, our society is going to function, the better things are going to be for everyone involved. So I'm really happy. I'm also really happy to see a lot of stories about military spouses come out, because those are a lot of the, you know, like I said before, we get a lot of accounts of the battlefield, whether in books or through reporters who are embedded. But then, like I said, those units come home, they're welcomed home, the reporters go home to their families too, and no one sees what happens next. And so I'm really glad that people are tackling that. You know, Siobhan Fallon had her great collection of short stories, you know, When the Men Are Gone, and Kristen Hanna's Homefront, and, you know, there's just a lot of great literature coming out along the military spouse line, too, which I think is really
neat. And a few months ago, we actually had Kristen Hanna on the show.
So, oh, great.
Wonderful. Yeah. So, yeah, that was a great.
This is a great book.
So, Erin, what has the feedback been from the military community in regards to your book? I mean, are they receiving it well, or have you even?
It has been received well, yeah. And it was like a huge sigh of relief the first couple times that I had, you know, military related reporters and so forth read it. I had a great write up in Stars and Stripes a couple weeks ago from Terry Barnes, who's a military spouse herself, and she, when I did the interview with her, she said, you know, I just want to make sure you have no military connection, right? And that was the greatest compliment that I think anyone's ever given me. So it has been received very well. That's been kind of the common feedback is, you know, I don't understand how you're not related to the military community in any way, and so. Which just tells me that my research paid off and I did the story justice. So I'm very proud of that, and I'm happy about that.
So I'm curious, because Star and I did write a military related book, and when we sent our stuff to the editor, that was an event in and of itself, because we speak military-ese. And
yes.
Of course they sent us stuff back and we were like, that is not at all what we meant, but okay, like, that's not how that really is supposed to be read, but all righty. It really was a challenge. There were four of us authors on 1001 Things to Love, and it was a back and forth process when it came to editing, because most of the stuff that I understand your story is a lot different than what we wrote in terms of, you know, how the books are even written. But was it difficult to write like the military would read? Did you find a challenge there?
There was a challenge because I wanted it to be authentic, but then I also, you know, you want the normal person to understand it, right? So there was just like you all had, I think there was a lot of back and forth with my editor. Because even, you know, I had immersed myself in the lingo and everything else at that point. And I would say, well, I'm not going to spell out, you know, I'm not going to say forward operating base every time I have to say it, or, you know,
right. Spell
all these things out for the average reader. It's, you know, and so I finally told my editor, I said, if you can Google that acronym and that's exactly what comes up, I think that should be okay. You know, that should be.
Well, I mean, we usually spell it out once and then we're done. Like, okay,
right,
go.
Right,
time.
Exactly.
If you don't do it after that, you're going to have to look that sucker up.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's why you got a Kindle. You can highlight it.
Amen. Amen. But yeah, and you know, that was, there was also difficulty in terms of just getting my the publisher and the editor to be supportive of kind of a they kept calling it a darker book. I like to call it complex, but there's a lot that happens in here to the main character and her husband, and there's a lot of serious subjects tackled, and so there was a great back and forth there. You know, I really wanted to represent these things accurately and as they happen a lot of times, and they wanted to make it a little bit nicer, and so we had to compromise on that a little bit too. And by nicer, I mean a little more light. So that itself was a compromise, and I sent through a lot of statistics to my editor at one point on suicide rates, on homelessness rates, on unemployment rates, on, you know, how often the inordinate rate at which returning veterans intersect with the criminal justice system,
yeah.
All of these things. So there was a lot of back and forth even on that.
So, Erin, did it take you a long time to finish, or did the story itself come easily?
It never comes easily, I think. Not just this story, but any story just in writing. I wouldn't say it took a long time to finish. I think once I did the research and all the interviews and, you know, kind of got my head around what this story was going to be, it went pretty quickly as far as writing goes. But in writing terms, that's usually, you know, 2 years, right? My first book took over 8, so this seemed really quick in comparison.
But, yeah, you're like, dude, this is easy.
Yeah, yeah, I'm just gonna whip this off. In retrospect, I guess that's not the shortest amount of time, but it seemed like a short period of time compared to the first one.
For writing, I think I'm gonna go with yes.
Yes.
I do think that it went fairly fast for you. I mean,
yeah.
You know, how long it takes to write a book is not a fast thing. I know that ours was, you know, conceptually, we had it down, but when we had fleshing it out, we were under the gun. I mean, they were like, okay, well, we want this out by, and we're like, what? And there were four of us. So, yeah, I totally understand that. So, Erin, where can we go for more information? Where can we go to get the book and to find out more about you and read up?
Well, the book is available in all major bookstores and even, you know, independent bookstores are carrying it. So it's widely available, or it should be. I hope it is. I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
You can get it on Amazon?
Yes, and it's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Google Play and all those outlets. So, and I think you mentioned my website at the beginning, but it's erinsolalo.com. And that has a Q&A, and it's got a sample first chapter and all that great stuff. So if people want to preview it, that's an easy way to do it as well.
Okay, and it's E-R-I-N-C-E-L-E-L-L-O, right?
That's correct.
Yay, yeah. Me. I did that from memory. Yeah. I know you guys can't tell what I'm reading.
Wow.
That's totally from memory.
That is seriously impressive.
Yeah, I know. Thank you so much, girl, for taking time out and hanging with us tonight, even though you're on vacation.
Thank you. This was my pleasure. I was so excited to sit down and talk to you both. So I can't tell you how much I appreciate it.
Go kiss a big old palm tree for me. I would love to be there right now drinking a pina colada.
I will send warm thoughts your way.
Sounds good.
About
all right,
you
guys. Go check out Erin's website at Erin Celello. It's erinceello.com and find out more about the book. All right, that's it for our main guest tonight, but we've got our resource of the week. Janet is coming up with our resource of the week, so stay tuned, guys. We'll be back with more Army Wife Talk Radio in just a few minutes.
My first week home was great. We had a party.
2:00 in the morning, they were waiting for me.
My niece was waiting for me at the airport with a sign.
There was a huge sign across my front house, and it said, "Welcome home, Megan."
They lifted me up on their shoulders. And
first week back, people just said thank you.
Now, what about the second week? A new generation of veterans is coming home. Make a difference for them at WelcomeBackVeterans.org.
Brought to you by WelcomeBackVeterans.org, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, and the Ad Council.
This is Army Wife Talk Radio Live. Give us a call to share your story. Now, it's time for the AWTR Resource of the Week.
I'm on a radio show. Bye.
Hi, and welcome back to Army Wife Talk Radio. It's time for our Resource of the Week, and I'm your host, Janet McIntosh. Every week, we feature informative resources for you, our military families. And this week, we have with us singer, songwriter, and musician, Lisa Dudley. Lisa, are you with us?
I am. I'm right here.
Hi. Welcome to the show. We're glad to have you.
Thank you. This is a great show.
Oh, we appreciate that. Well, normally we start these segments off by having you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're calling from tonight.
Okay. My name is Lisa Dudley. I'm a singer and a songwriter, and I'm calling from upstate New York, which is about an hour south of Albany, where it's still very cold.
Oh, I can imagine. Now,
we're really quite cold here. Everyone is talking about it. We can't believe it. It isn't spring yet.
I know, especially since we just had the first day of spring. Even I'm down in Atlanta, and today it was in the 40s, and we were all just like, what happened?
Yeah.
So let's start by having you give us a little bit of back history. Tell us, like, about your parents and where you were born.
Well, I was born in the St. Albans Naval Hospital, which is in, believe it or not, New York City, out on the in Queens, and my parents were married, and my mother and father were both in the Army. But back then, when a woman got pregnant in the Army, you had to leave. So she was just, as a matter of fact, we were just talking about that the other day, how different it was for her than for other women now, where they are no longer allowed to keep, they are allowed to keep their career now, but my mother wasn't allowed to. And that was fascinating because, I mean, you know, she made it through boot camp and all of that, and she had herself a little job, but then she met my dad, and then along came Lisa. So I was born in the St. Albans Naval Hospital in New York City.
No, I understand. I also served, and I actually got pregnant with our daughter while I was in service. So I understand that you're right. It's very different from the way it was back then. Now, you have a very passionate following of soldiers and veterans. Why do you say that their favorite song is Angel on My Shoulder?
Well, Angel on My Shoulder is, people love that song because they say angels bring them safely home from battle. And I don't think it's just soldiers either. I think it's all of us who have experiences in their lives where they believe they were touched by some divine blessing or presence or a miracle of some kind. And we call those experiences often that an angel was on our shoulder. I've read many stories about soldiers who tell a story about, well, I'll tell you a story about that. My co-writer on that song, his son was in Iraq, and he was in a situation where all of a sudden the tire blew out of his Humvee, and the whole caravan had to go on ahead, and there was, instead of an IED on the side of the road, the enemy had decided to put explosives in a tractor trailer, and the tractor trailer blew up, and all the vehicles ahead of him were gone. And if he hadn't had a flat tire, he said he was thrown from the vehicle and he broke his ribs and stuff, but he didn't hit his head. And to me, that means he had an angel on his shoulder.
Oh, I imagine so. Wow, that's an incredible story. Now you said that that's the son of the man that you co-wrote the song with, which was Harry Moore, right?
Yes, I skipped ahead.
No, that's fine. And
yeah.
He was a veteran too himself, correct?
Yes, of Vietnam, and he worked at the Dover Air Force Base, where he brought home the bodies and took them, and they would return them to the families. And even though he was never in Vietnam, he had some very serious post-traumatic stress disorder And that's how it was that we started writing these songs together, because he would wake up in the middle of the night and I'd say, what's going on? And he'd say he could smell the bodies again. And so, yeah, right? It doesn't matter. People are affected. You can be a family person. You can not be actually there, but it still affects you.
Yes. I especially having a job like that, I can imagine that was very trying on him.
Yeah, yeah. And I didn't know how bad it was until this started to happen, you know.
Right. Now, did you write any other songs with him?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we did. It was basically part of his, almost like a catharsis. We did it as almost as therapy in order to get these ideas down. He had a lot of, like, we have a whole bunch of songs. I call them the soldier songs, which I play for veterans when I play out. And although I have to tell you, many people who have had divorce, a lot of men who've been divorced, they love these songs because they feel like they've done battle, even though they never.
I think they all probably find a area in their lives where these songs fit something that they've been through.
Yeah, and we also tried to write them that way. We always would try to write them so that they had he was from Louisiana, deep in the South, and I was living at the time also in Louisiana with him. And so he had a different way of looking at the world. We tried to make the songs seem very old-fashioned so that they didn't feel modern, so that they would feel like they were old country songs or old folk songs. And what I would do is just have him talk, and I would write things down. I would, like, sit at the computer and type up all the words that he said, and then we would see the best way to put them to music. And it was mostly about, like, we have this one song called Broken Purple Heart. And it's about a veteran who comes home and ends up getting divorced. And he had a purple heart, but he says, the man in the song says that it wasn't as bad as courtroom combat.
Oh, goodness. Now, how long have you been performing and singing these songs?
Well, I've been singing since I was born. My mother says I was singing in the cradle. I was standing in the cradle. And I've been singing all my life. She put me up on the stage when I was a Girl Scout. But it was about, I think, I went out completely professional about 10, actually it was really right after 9/11 when I started doing so much of this with the kind of propulsion that I have now, or compulsion, if you want to say. After 9/11, this young man, Harry's son, he lost three friends of his. Their fathers were all killed in the towers. They lived in New Jersey, and a lot of people from New Jersey worked in New York City, and the Twin Towers was a quick train ride under the water. So then they would work down in that area, and all of his friends essentially lost their fathers. And so when he was 15 years old, he made a decision that he was going to go become a Marine. And
wow.
I thought, well, what can I do? You know, especially when he came home safe. I mean, other than, you know, some broken ribs and a lot of PTSD himself, I was like, well, I have to pay back somehow. And this was the only way that I knew to do it.
Now, speaking of PTSD, which so many of our soldiers are suffering from, what are your thoughts on PTSD and music? Do you feel like those two have a connection, like that they can help with the healing process in some way to help our soldiers and our veterans?
I totally feel that way. I think, and there's more than one way to do it. I mean, for example, with Harry, what he did was he wrote the songs and went out and sang them, or he wrote the songs and I sang them. That was one way to do it. But the people who would listen to these songs, like we were living in Nashville when I first wrote the first song, which is called 21 Guns, and we wrote that after the military funeral of a friend. And I had never been to a military funeral before, and when I saw the flag being folded and the white gloves, the way they moved their fingers, I was overwhelmed. And we came home and we wrote this song, and then we went to Nashville and we played it out at a club. And little did we know that there's veterans everywhere. You know, you just don't know who they are, and many of them are suffering. And so I got up and I started singing 21 Guns and a Bugle Sang 'Em Home. And the next thing I know, these guys came out of the audience and they all stood in front of the stage at attention with their hands in salute. And later they told me that coming home from Vietnam was very different than what the soldiers are experiencing now. They weren't praised and they weren't honored and they weren't necessarily treated well. And they said
you're exactly right. They were treated horribly.
And they said to me, and they cried. And these were big men, you know. And they cried, and they said, nobody ever sang for us. And one man said to me, it felt like the first time he had been able to feel anything. When he heard the music, it touched him and in some place in his body where he needed it. And so I really think music has a real place. I've been writing songs that aren't even soldier songs. I have a song called All Is Well. And I tell people, write another verse. You know, there are just little verses. Write your own verses. You know, sing these songs. Sing them in the car. Sing them where you need to sing them.
Right. Now, your latest CD release is entitled Broken Purple Heart, and that's a live recording of the first concert for veterans. Can you tell us a little bit about that concert and how it came about?
Oh, sure. Well, again, it was when my stepson came home from Iraq, and I felt so strongly that I had to give back. And we had all these soldier songs. I'm not actually sure what made me do this concert for veterans, but I just decided to do it. And we had brought Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts into March, and we had all the veterans come in and do a Pledge of Allegiance, and all the flags lined up. It was really quite powerful.
Wow.
It was really neat. And then we did all the songs that the different and my dad was there, and my dad's a veteran. And
so
that meant a lot to me that he was there to see that. And we pledged and we sang the national anthem, and then we started singing all these songs, and a friend of mine recorded it all, and I thought, wow, we could put this out, you know. The album is beautiful. We have a picture of a purple heart on the back, and I showed it to much like Erin Solello said, she showed it to other people and read.
Right.
'Cause I had some people said to me, "Well, you can't put that purple heart back on there. How dare you take advantage of, you know, people who've had purple hearts, and where do you get off?" And I said, "Well, I ran it by other soldiers." And they were pleased.
Right, right.
There's always going to be somebody who's not.
Right, exactly. I was about to say the same thing. You're never going to please everybody. Now,
yeah.
I've also heard that there's something about your cowboy boots. Do you want to tell us what that is?
Oh, well, you know, I'm a big woman, and I have really big feet. And so this gal once told me that, you know, the safest thing for a woman to do is with big feet, who has to wear men's shoes a lot, is to buy, you know, cowboy boots. And so you can get some pretty wicked-looking cowboy boots, and I started wearing them, and, of course, they're expensive, so then I started buying them from eBay and garage sales and stuff like that, and then people started giving them to me, and then people started painting them and giving them to me, and so I have, like, about in my office that I'm calling you from, I have a bookshelves filled with cowboy boots. I must have 26 pairs at least.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and some of them have been given to me also by veterans. Recently, a gentleman gave, a retired Air Force gentleman, gave me several pairs. He said he was moving to Hawaii. He didn't need them anymore, and I wear them. I really like it because, you know, when you sing, you're supposed to, you know, stomp your feet. You know, because my songs are not, even the sad songs are often up tempo. So, you know, constantly having to pound my foot, you know, and I wear these boots, and they make me remember, oh, not sure what it is.
Yeah, it sounds like a neat little collection.
Yeah, right? Yeah, but you want them to look feminine, right? You want them to look feminine, so like they're painted purple.
Now, what is your latest project that you're working on? Can you share that with us?
Yeah, actually I can. I've written a song called I Believe in America, and I translated it into Spanish, and again, I also had someone check it and make sure that Spanish was correct, which it wasn't, but we fixed it. And we translated it into Spanish, and I recently did a show in Texas where they had asked me to do it in Spanish, and we arranged it so it was Spanish and English, and, you know, Spanish and English, so you didn't get bored. And it was such a hit that's going out soon on, should be on YouTube eventually. And so anybody interested should go to Lisa Dudley, DUDLEY.com, and get on my mailing list, and then I'll send out information about that because I feel very strongly. I have some friends, actually I have a friend from years ago who got his American citizenship by serving in the military. And a lot of people are doing that now. Not that many people know about it, but and their families are American citizens also, and they want to be able to sing in Spanish about their love for this country.
Right. No, I understand that completely. We are going to run out of time, so one more time, can you give our listeners where we can go to get more information on you and the music?
Sure. It's Lisa, L-I-S-A, Dudley, DUDLEY.com. And thanks for having me.
No, thank you, Lisa, so much for being with us. We appreciate it. AWTR listeners, stay tuned for our AWTR Minute and more information about what is coming up next week on our show.
Looking for more resources? Visit us on the web at armywifenetwork.com. Browse our resource database. Submit your field problem question. Request field problems to be published in your area. Find tons of Army family empowerment, a directory of Army posts worldwide, message boards, live chat, and much, much more. Go to armywifenetwork.com. That's armywifenetwork.com.
This is Maria Murphy with Simply Put Together in the Me Minute. Today we're going to talk about framing your way into feeling happier. Framing is the way we shape our thoughts. For instance, when you tell your 3-year-old you're going to play the fun cleanup game, you're framing. We adults can easily be drawn into negative framing. But when we frame our days and our lives in a positive light, we change how we feel about our world. Instead of the dread of preparing, say, for the holidays, we can practice framing. What our kids will feel waking up on Christmas morning, or even recollecting our own memories of childhood. These kinds of framing activities can help us shape our world and allow us to have a more positive outlook. This is Maria Murphy with Simply Put Together. You can go to www.simplyputtogether.com to sign up for my free weekly e-letter and get a copy of my free e-book, 30 Minutes for Me.
Want more? ArmyWifeNetwork.com offers discussion boards, military family resources, Loving a Soldier blog, and much, much more. Tell your friends about AWN with our interactive tools. Visit us online at ArmyWifeNetwork.com. ArmyWifeNetwork.com. Interactive empowerment for Army wives.
Oh my goodness, what a great show. I just can't get the Lello out of my head. It's all Jello, Jello, and I like it. Like, that, you know, reminds me of those jokes that Phil Dunphy says when he answers the phone. You know, he does funny jokes like that. And he'll say, I don't know, something, 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 and then he answers the phone, Jello. Your favorite dessert when you were a kid? Jello.
Not Jello. No.
Jello. All right, so our show this week was awesome. Our team is so fun over there in the chat room. You guys should really join us. We have a good time. Next week, it's April 1st. It's April. How the heck did that happen? It's going to be July before I know it. We are going to feature, oh, my gosh, I did not even realize that this is who's coming up this week. Oh, you guys, am I hosting next week? I am, right? Oh, I so hope so. Yes, I believe it's me and Star, isn't it? Next week.
It is. It's you and Star, yes.
You guys, one of my favorite people, Mary Hunt, author Mary Hunt. Mary Hunt from Debt Proof Living, just a fabulous person. She is going to come on the show, and we're going to talk about raising financially confident kids. Yippee! I just got the book today. I didn't realize it was coming up that soon. Resource of the week is Robin Carr. So we got all kinds of good stuff coming up here on the show. So make sure you're tuning in.
Yep. And in the meantime, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/ArmyWifeNetwork and on our blog, lovingasoldier.com. And don't forget to soak up all the knowledge available on our main site of ArmyWifeNetwork.com.
All right, you guys, that's Interactive Empowerment for Army Wives by Army Wives. And this week, it's Crooks and Swanson. Oh, it just sounds so weird to be by our last names. It's Tara and Paula. That's who we are.
There you go.
And we're glad that you guys spent your week with us, and we'll see you next week, Monday night, same time, same place. See you then.
The views and opinions expressed in our show are personal. Army Wife Talk Radio is in no way affiliated with the Department of Defense or any other branch of the armed services, and inclusion in our show does not reflect endorsement by the DOD, any local government, or their agencies. Thank you for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week for another informative edition of Army Wife Talk Radio.